Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Well, Frontline is camping
with Frontline.
Frontline, by the way, has outstanding productions.
Geography Frontline.
Hey Frontliner, this is the official relaunch of Geography Frontline about 4 months without a podcast. It's been a really hard time. Well, there are some major changes to the show, starting with this episode number 107. Most of the sections will still be there. Some are modified, some totally new. Exciting! But instead of talking my way through every possible section we can have here, let's just start with our today's topics. Bikeway design and a new language. Before we get into the bikeway design, here's something kind of obvious if you're a longtime listener to Geography Frontline. The first 106 episodes were produced in German, right? And you know what? Not anymore. And here is the reason. What's the purpose of Geography Frontline? To bring people interested in geography together. To build a network wherein we discuss the same topics, share ideas, help each other out and try to translate our geographical knowledge into everyday news, right? Yeah. So you read your newspaper, favorite website or iPad news app and think, what's so geographical about all these topics? In this show, we'll try to deconstruct news from a wide variety of topics like globalization, urban planning, migration, economic geography, and many more. And whenever you stumble over something interesting, just feel free to drop me an email. Send your emails to comment@geography.com. That's the new address for all comments. The German comment@geography.de will still work. Just tell us about the topics you heard about, include the hyperlink if possible, and give us your opinion on it. And we can discuss these topics in the upcoming episodes. Yeah. Another cool feature is Geography voicemail. If you have Skype installed, and I'm sure many of you have, then that's the possibility to leave audio comments. Directly audio comments to the show, questions, statements, everything you like. I can download your voice message and integrate it into the next episode. I think that's pretty cool. There are even more ways to leave feedback, but perhaps we can talk about that later. And I just want to add one more thing. The reason why we are talking English now, even though it's not my mother tongue, is that I want to bring people together, that I want to have that discussion going on, and not just for German listeners, but for everybody interested in geography. And I would say that more or less all of us should be able to understand and speak English, as we have a lot of journal articles in English, a lot of textbooks, and just can get along without speaking English. And so that's why we're turning to English now with episode 107, and I really hope that I don't piss off too many long-time listeners that don't feel comfortable with that. Okay, but let's do a short break and then hop directly into our first discussion. Okay, let's start with the first topic for today, and this is called bikeway design. I read an interesting article on the website thecityfix.com titled Urban Bikeway Design Guide for US Cities. And what is it all about? It's about, and here I'm citing from the website, an urban bikeway design guide, the preeminent resource for designing and engineering bikeways in cities. The mission of this guide is to provide cities with state-of-the-practice solutions that can help create complete streets that are safe and enjoyable for bicyclists. Sounds interesting. What do you think? The big question for me would be, how should bikeways be integrated into the city grid? And can there be a master plan for bikeways? How should this work? I don't know. I mean, not every city has the same grid, right? And if I am reading The examples in the guide are based on the experiences of the best cycling cities in the world. I'm thinking Amsterdam. The city is really bicycle friendly. I'm sure you can come up with some other examples, but as for Amsterdam, this is not a perfect blueprint for US cities. Or what do you think? Have you ever looked at the bikeways there? Look quite a bit different than a US city and bikeways in these cities. And if you take a look into the show notes, you'll find a link to a city map of Amsterdam. You can basically bike everywhere. And speaking about the show notes, by the way, every episode of Frontline contains additional information. All hyperlinks, infos about the songs played, and direct links to the iTunes store, time and date of announcements, like upcoming conferences and so on. You can find all these on the website of the current episode of Geography Frontline. Just go to geography.com, open Frontline, and there click on the latest episode, in this case 107, and you'll find everything there. Info should be in the ID3 tags of the MP3 file too. Yeah, that's a pretty good resource to catch up with all the things we talk about in this episode. Anyways, let's take a look at the report about bikeway design we were just talking about. Yeah, you can find it on the website of the National Association of City Transportation Officials. A link to that website is in the show notes. And there we find really interesting statements that show how good it is to have these new guidelines. And here I'm citing again. It is important to note that many urban situations are complex. Treatments must be tailored to the individual situation. Good engineering judgment based on deep knowledge of bicycle transportation should be a part of bikeway design. Let's continue reading with a description of what a conventional bike lane is. What is a bike lane? Bike lanes designate an exclusive space for bicyclists through the use of pavement markings and signature. The bike lane is located adjacent to motor vehicle travel lanes and flow in the same direction as motor vehicle travel. Bike lanes are typically on the right side of the street between the adjacent travel lane and curb, road edge, or parking lane. Guys, for whom do you write this? Bike lanes designate an exclusive space for bicyclists? Give me a break. I never would have guessed that. Bike lanes are an exclusive space for bicyclists. Really? Wow. When we skim through this 304 pages, yeah, that's how long this paper is, I realize that it's a very basic description of how to implement bikeways. Signs, markings, and so on. Everything is described into detail with pictures and renderings. And so I'm a little disappointed, I have to say that, because I thought we might find something really new in this design guide. But take a look at the document yourself and let me know what you think of it. Because when I read the New York City Transportation Commissioner and current NACTO President Jeanette Sadik-Karn, that she says that the guide is tailored to US cities and will function as a set of standards to bring innovative design concepts in bicycle infrastructure, then I think, innovative design concepts? And these are like, green paint on the streets. Really? This is it? I'd say we should just do a voting on this. Let's do a quick vote on this. The quick vote, by the way, is the easiest way to leave a comment about recent topics. On the episode's website, you can find the current question, and below is a drop-down menu where you can just click what you think. Hit the submit button and your vote is counted. So this week's question is: a new design guide for bikeways. A. Essential for urban planning. B. A really good idea. C. Won't have a positive effect. D. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. Or you could decide to go for answer E, and that would be another opinion. And if you want, you can add a comment after submitting your vote. There will be a pop-up window where you can see the provisional results. And in this window, there is the option to leave a comment. This really makes sense when you choose answer E, another opinion, because I would really like to know what that opinion is. So leave your feedback there, or you write an email with your opinion to comment@geography.com. Pretty easy. Or you leave a comment on the voicemail. The Skype name is Geography, and we'll talk about the results and comments in the next episode of Geography Frontline. Well, the next category is really fun. As our perception is mostly determined by visual input, there are other senses that have an impact on how we perceive the world too, right? So what we are trying in this section is to sensitize ourselves to hearing. And I will play little sound bites from our everyday environment, and you have to guess what this sound is. Are you ready? Here it comes. Did you get it? Want to hear it again? Okay, this is not too hard to guess, I would say. Well, send your guesses to comment@geography.com or call the voicemail and let us know in your own voice what this might have been. And while you're still guessing what sound this could have been, let's play some other sounds put together to form a great song. This is a song from the album Immortal. Artist is Val Davis, and the song is called, to reflect my current situation here in Austin, Texas, Texas Sky.
Here in these woods, my dear, and they've closed and locked the gate.
Texas Sky from Val Davis out of the album Immortal from the PodSafe Music Network. You find that on music.mevio.com. Completely PodSafe and free to play on every podcast. You can also download the song or the whole album on iTunes. I'll give you the iTunes link for the whole album, for the US store and for the German store as well. You'll find them in the show notes. It'll cost you about $8.99 or €9.99. So let's move on to the next section of Geography Frontline, and this one is called Frontline on Facebook. So what is happening on our Facebook page? If you have a Facebook account, you can just type in Geography, search for that, and you'll pretty easily find it and then become a fan or a member or whatever this is called nowadays on Facebook, a follower or something like that, and just post comments and add everything you want to on that Facebook page of Geography Frontline. So Stefan has done that, and he says might be of some interest. What should be of interest? He posted a link, and if you click that link, it opens a website with an essay on Socrates in EarPods. The iPodification of Education. That's an essay by Tara Brabazon, professor of media studies in the School of Computing, Mathematics and Information Sciences at the University of Brighton. I have to say, that's not an easy read, but worth reading it. I give you an example, and if you want, comment on it on Frontline on Facebook or by email or voicemail for the next episode. So let's read. Now that there are wars on terror, casualized workplaces, little union protection for workers, and an economy based on credit card debt, universities are soft, kind, and cuddly institutions shielding our students from the dire scale of social injustice. And the very time that we mouth the rhetoric that universities prepare students for the workplace, we are actually masking the sickening inequalities, injustices, and disrespect that is the marinade of contemporary life. Wow. Actually, if we failed more students, expelled them from classrooms for not doing the reading, and demanded their presence on time and on topic, then we would be preparing them for the workforce. When bosses expect iWork for their iSalary, then iLectures on an iPod may have a place. So if you want to, just have a closer read, take a closer look at the website. And there is another comment or post on the Frontline on Facebook page. A post from Disurban. That promotes a website. I already commented on that and saying what's that page about, because I don't know what's it about. Is it worth looking into it? Generally, I'm not sure if I like these kinds of posts. Always looks like an ad, right? That's what I've posted last week, I think. So perhaps you can help me out here, Frontliner, and just take a look at this website. I would really love to hear you comment on that. Yeah, would be really great. So, I would bet that you've never heard that jingle before in an episode of Geography Frontline, right? So now, we have a brand new section for the relaunch of Geography Frontline. Because some days ago, I was walking the beach of the Gulf of Mexico, near Rockport, if somebody knows the region. And I was thinking how this must have looked like in the times of exploration. The new continent, actually the new two continents. Think about Christopher Columbus, if you like. But I had to think about Alexander von Humboldt. In case you've never heard of Alexander von Humboldt, he lived from 1769 till, 1859. Was a German explorer and naturalist, and traveled South and Middle America around 1800. Yeah. For about 5 years or so. And he, in a way, was the first geographer of our modern times. Know that modernity begins after French Revolution, Aufklärung, and so on. So his voyage to Latin America actually is tremendously important for geography, especially for physical geography as a scientific discipline. And during that time, while he was on that voyage, he recorded everything he saw and put all his findings together in a book called Personal Narrative of Travels to the Equinoctial Regions of America during the year 1799 to 1804. And it comes in three volumes and it's available online and for free at the website of Project Gutenberg. You can download it in iTunes too. And you'll find both links in the show notes. So the question for me really is, Humboldt may be seen as one of the first modern geographers, but is there anything we can get out of his works today? So instead of reading it by myself and think about it by myself, I think it might be nice to do this in the show and think about the possibilities and benefits for us as geographers today. So it is the year 1799. The French Revolution is over. Immanuel Kant has just published his Critique of Pure Reason. And what else? Yeah, the United States have just been founded. Mm-hmm. Listen to what Humboldt has to say. Chapter 1.1. Preparations. Instruments, departure from Spain, landing at the Canary Islands. From my earliest youth, I felt an ardent desire to travel into distant regions, seldom visited by Europeans. This desire is characteristic of a period of our existence when appears an unlimited horizon and when we find an irresistible attraction in the impetuous agitations of the mind and the image of positive danger. That's an interesting thing. Positive danger. The image of positive danger. Hmm? Do you think that we can find this image of positive danger today? Think about studies. Well, it really depends where you do your scientific research, your empirical fieldwork. But if you're doing borderland studies on the at, let's say, the Mexican border... Hmm? Image of positive danger. Mm-hmm. You fly into Syria to get some questionnaires filled out there. Yeah. Or to Tunisia. Or yeah, you name it. Hmm. Objects. Humboldt continues. Objects with which we are acquainted only by the animated narratives of travelers have a peculiar charm. They have a peculiar charm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's more or less media geography. I'm thinking media geography if I'm reading this. The influence of the media on our perception and construction of the world, right? Yeah. That the animated narratives of travelers have a peculiar charm. Hmm? Imagination wanders with a delight over that which is vague and undefined. And the pleasures we are deprived of seem to possess a fascinating power compared with which all we daily feel in the narrow cycle of sedentary life appears insipid. Mm-hmm. And I'm skimming through this first pages here and leave something out. You can read it if you want for yourselves and want to dig deeper into it. As personal circumstances then prevented me from executing the projects by which I was so powerfully influenced, I had leisure to prepare myself during 6 years for the observations I proposed to make on the new continent, as well as to visit different parts of Europe and to explore the lofty chain of the Alps, the structure of which I might afterwards compare with that of the Andes, of Quito, and of Peru. So, interesting thing, 2 points here. He prepared himself for 6 years for that field trip. Oh my gosh. I wish I would have, let's say, half a year to prepare for a field trip. But wow, that's another time, hmm? And doesn't really fit into today's roadmaps, scientific roadmaps. Wow. But another thing is interesting that he went to the Alps and did some research there to compare it later to the Andes of Quito. Yeah. To the mountains there in South America. And that's one basic method in geography, right? Compare what you see to things that you already know. This mustn't be right, but it's a good start for most of the time to just reflect upon your thoughts, your stream of consciousness, what you have in your mind, and use that to try to explain what you see. And then he goes on explaining what he did and where he already traveled to. I had traversed a part of Italy in 1795, but had not been able to visit the volcanic regions of Naples and Sicily. And I regretted leaving Europe without having seen Vesuvius, Stromboli and Etna. I felt that in order to form a proper judgment of many geological phenomena, especially of the nature of the rocks of trap formation, it was necessary to examine the phenomena presented by burning volcanoes. I determined, therefore, to return to Italy in the month of November 1797. Mm-hmm. And there, here we have it again. It's comparing, comparing what you know to what is new for you. I made a long stay at Vienna. And there he looks at fine collections of exotic plants and has a friendship with the Messers. And that's interesting, because he could stay there for some weeks and do research and had his friends there. And that tells me it's very important to have connections, right? Connections to people, networking is important. And that tells me that, that it's still important. And that's still a point for nowadays research for our atmosphere in geography, in the faculty, between students and faculty and so on. And that's what Frontline is all about too. It's about networking, about contacts, and about helping each other out, right? So he goes on and says that I traveled with Mr. Leopold von Buch through several cantons of Salzburg and Styria, countries alike and interesting to the landscape painter and the geologist. But just when I was about to cross the Tyrolese Alps, the war, then raging in Italy, obliged me to abandon the project of going to Naples. And that can happen today too, right? Think about doing research. Like I said, in Syria, right now you don't want to go to Syria. Do you? Or imagine yourself half a year ago doing research in, let's say, Libya. Welcome to the real world. Yeah, no, would have been quite interesting to conduct some geographical field work there. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a little more. Just come to the end of the first part here from Humboldt. A short time before, a gentleman passionately fond of the fine arts and who had visited the coasts of Greece and Illyria to inspect their monuments made me a proposal to accompany him in an expedition to Upper Egypt. Wow. This expedition was to occupy only 8 months. Only 8 months. Humboldt, come on. Provided with astronomical instruments and able to draughtsmen, we were to ascend the Nile as far as Aswan, after minutely examining the positions of the Sa'id between Tetiris and the cataracts. Though my views had not hitherto been fixed on any region but the tropics, I could not resist the temptation of visiting countries so celebrated in the annals of human civilization. I therefore accepted this proposition, but with the express condition that on our return to Alexandria I should be at liberty to continue my journey through Syria and Palestine. The studies which I entered upon with a view to this new project, I afterwards found useful when I examined the relations between the barbarous monuments of Mexico and those belonging to the nations of the old world. Well, there we have the comparison again, right? So, and just to give you a little teaser for next episode's read of the works of Alexander von Humboldt, then he says, because he's still in Paris, I left Paris with the intention of embarking for Algier and Egypt, but by one of those vicissitudes which sway the affairs of this life, I returned to my brother from the river Amazon and Peru without having touched the continent of Africa. Wow. So this should be all for... Let me put my iPad away. This should be all for today's reading Humboldt and Humboldt's voyage. And So what do you think of his voyage? Want to hear more? Or even read it completely along with our discussion about it? As I said, I put the links to that book into the show notes, and you can have a look and just download the PDF and yeah, go start reading. It's about 350 pages and it comes in three volumes, so about 1,000 pages. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Might be interesting to take a look at it. Well, if you're a long-time listener of Geography Frontline, you'll recognize this jingle. That's the announcements. This episode's announcement is about the AAG annual meeting next year in New York City. It takes place in Manhattan from February 24th to 28th. And on the website, it says that the AAG annual meeting is an interdisciplinary forum open to anyone with an interest in geography and related disciplines. Hey, like our podcast. You can find the link to the AAG annual meeting in the show notes. And I think it's always a great opportunity to meet people, listen to a ton of presentations and present a paper or poster yourself. And if you've never been there, you should really think about it this time. And especially for the European frontliner, this might be one of the cheapest opportunities to go to an AAG annual meeting. Because this year's meeting was in Seattle, and flights to New York City are really much less expensive, believe me. So, this is it. Whenever you hear this jingle, we have reached the end of the episode, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to send your written comments to comment@geography.com, and for audio feedback, just call the Skype voicemail. Skype name is Geography, and I hope to hear from you in episode 108. And till then, don't forget our common motto, which is, the network is us.